Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
Welcome to the Major Spoilers Podcast, episode 1069. That's right, 1069. That's how far we've come. I can't believe, Rodrigo, that we have this. I know that there are people that do daily shows. Like Scott Johnson is already up to like 2,500 million episodes of TMS. But for us to hit 1,069 episodes when we really only release about 50 episodes a year, we average because, you know, we take at least 2 weeks off of the year, sometimes more. But we've been doing this a long time. I gave a presentation this week about podcasting. And I was like, yeah, I started podcasting in 2005, long before any of you kids were born. And I realized, oh, crap. I'm coming up on 20 years of podcasting next year. So, 1069. Thank you, everybody, for being with us this long. And you know who you are, like J. Michael T., one of our big, fine contributors, one of our big, fine patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. He's actually been with me since I was doing Coolness Roundup with Charlie White all those years ago and then transitioned over to Major Spoilers. So, people have been around with us for that long. Some people have been baby children in the middle school when we started and are now have baby children of their own.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. It's getting to the point where podcasting is the thing that I've done the longest.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I'm shooting and editing my own like videos on my YouTube channel now, but like I got out of TV production like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's getting to the point where podcasting is the thing I've been doing the longest professionally, which is weird to think about.
I know. That is scary. But hey, we're glad that you're here. Matthew is not here this week for reasons. I don't know. Something involving him in an airplane. I'm sure he's going to rant about it online. But if you've got thoughts on things that we talk about on this show, whether it is our upcoming discussion of the Black Glove, or if it's one of our reviews or other things, you can head over to our Discord server at Discord. Well, I don't remember what it's. It's not discord.com, but we've got a link to our Discord server in the show notes and you can pop over there. You can join for free. A lot of people are waiting. There were like 3 or 4 people just joined today and everyone is super awesome and super welcoming over there in our growing community of awesome fans. Some of whom have been around since the beginning and before. If you haven't been around since the beginning or before, that's okay. It's cool. If this is your first podcast, welcome. We love you too. And we're going to talk about some comic book reviews because that's what we do on this show.
Yeah.
Rodrigo, have you seen the new Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
I have not.
Neither have I. I want to see it, but I have a thing with AMC theaters right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm not probably going to see it.
I didn't see the first one.
You didn't see Afterlife? I watched Afterlife again on Sunday night. I had like 3 hours in the last 2 weeks. Had just been super packed, but I had 3 hours and I watched the new Shogun series on Hulu. And then I still had a little bit of time. I'm like, you know what? Everybody's talking about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'm going to go watch Ghostbusters Afterlife again. And it is an enjoyable movie, even though it is technically a remake of the first story, Zool and all.
Mm-hmm.
But that then led me into a comic book that is out this week from Dark Horse Comics, Ghostbusters Back in Town #1 from Greg Pak, David M. Boer, and art by Blue Delaquanti, I believe is how you pronounce it. This Back in Town is the story that takes place between Afterlife and Frozen Empire. How did Callie and Gary and Trevor and Phoebe, how did they get from Oklahoma back to New York City? it's still not really answered 100% in this first issue, because suddenly they're driving into New York City and they're moving into the old firehouse, and they will be taking over the family business, so to speak. And that's all well and good. I question the, so there's a couple of things that I'm confused about. I like Greg Pak's writing. I think the art in this is interesting, but the art in this reminds me of stuff targeted towards a YA audience, which is interesting because Ghostbusters Afterlife was very much a young adult movie, not aimed at adults like the original Ghostbusters was. Just so happened a bunch of kids jumped on board with that. So the art is very kid friendly, and the story is very simple. Hey, we're back in town, and oh, hey, we're going to have some growing pains as we go and explore this firehouse that's been run down. And oh, Gary is still being a crazy nut job. And, you know, Callie is having problems fitting in, or Phoebe is having problems fitting in, and Trevor just wants to be a mechanic, and all the friends that they made in Oklahoma, they're trying to connect with over social medias, etc. And so there's not a whole lot of quote unquote action that goes on in this book. So the first question that I would have on this is, who's this targeted towards? Because if it's a Ghostbusters fan, maybe I need to look and see what the age range of Ghostbusters fans are, because this seems like it is a few years younger than what you might think a Ghostbusters fan would be. The second thing is the art is very simplistic, and that's not a bad thing, but it is feels like something that I would find in a YA targeted book, which if that's the case, then great. I think all the creators have done a bang up job in targeting that audience. But I also think that this story, the first issue, doesn't have enough driving it to make it super exciting and super enjoyable besides a few antic bits that are in the story. And so I think that this book is probably going to read better in trade than as a single issue. I know that that seems kind of harsh to say, but I think that if this were aimed at my 13-year-old, 12-year-old, soon to be 13, I think he'd probably dig it. I think if he had seen the previous Ghostbusters movies, first of all, people would say, you know, there's a scene with Dan Aykroyd and a ghost that is probably not appropriate for a 12-year-old. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Obviously, because 12-year-olds don't get that sexual humor in a movie from 1984 that's clearly aimed at adults. And then second, I'd probably get a visit from Child Protective Services because I had him watch Ghostbusters 2, the worst movie that was ever out there. I think he'd probably enjoy the, what was the one that was the all-female cast? Was that Answer the Call?
Answer the Call is the...
Yeah, that's a fairly subtitle. Solid, that's a fairly solid story.
I like that a lot. I was like full on laughing when I watched it. So no, I'm not sure why people hate it so much.
I mean, they hate it.
Yeah. Like if you have legit problems with Answer the Call, that's fine.
Yeah.
But,
Ghostbusters Afterlife is a fine movie, and I think it is I think if you went right from Ghostbusters to Ghostbusters Afterlife, I think that those two movies pair perfectly together, because a lot of the things, the big bad and Zool and everything that comes back, and the fact that the guy that's running the mine and pulling up that stuff created the building, created the metal for the building from the first movie, I think that's a perfect tie-in on all those things, and I think kids would enjoy it because it is a super kid-centric Ghostbusters movie. And so I think if you're then trying to get the hype for people to go see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, or for people that walk out of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and say, hey, wait a minute, how did they get from Oklahoma to New York City? I think that this book is there to, you know, answer the call. I then question the release schedule of this, because this is a 4-issue miniseries. It may be 6, but it's probably 4. This series should have kicked off 4 months ago, so that the trade paperback would be available the same weekend that the movie releases. And I get it that you know, hey, we want to get the hype so that people go and see Frozen Empire and instantly go to their comic book store and pick up Back in Town, or their bookstore and pick up Back in Town, or their newspaper stand and pick up Back in Town. I get that kind of stuff. But because this first issue feels kind of plain, I guess is the word I'm looking for, I don't think that this is the strongest showing. I think the better showing would be, hey, we've got the trade paperback ready to come out the same weekend that Frozen Empire is in theaters. I think that would have been the better play. So while I don't hate this book, while I do not dislike Ghostbusters Back in Town, there's a lot of stuff as I was reading this that just didn't jive with, you know, 1984 me, 14-year-old me, who went to go see Ghostbusters and have grown up with Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters animated series, you know, all the iterations of Ghostbusters since then. There's something about this that just doesn't hit my older person mind that may hit with a younger person. In which case, I think that this should have then maybe just been a direct to trade book, as opposed to trying to drag this out for 4 months. Not saying that this is bad. This is probably a property that needs to be handled a little differently than a monthly serialized book. And so Ghostbusters Back in Town, number one for me, it's a fine book. It does what I think it's trying to do, but I'm only going to give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Just very middle of the road book. I do want to see issue number 2 because I want to see how they start to propel the story and how they start to lead us into Frozen Empire. But I think I'm probably going to enjoy this more as a complete trade paperback. So 2.5 slices of meatloaf for me. If you want to support Major Spoilers and pick up this issue for yourself and check it out, we have a link in the show notes to our Amazon affiliate link. I know we don't talk about that affiliate link that often, Rodrigo, but did you know that if you use the Amazon affiliate link over at majorspoilers.com and you buy anything, doesn't have to be comic books, but if you buy anything, a little bit comes back our way. And when I say a little bit, I'm talking about like 3%. So if you buy this comic book, cover price $3.99, what is that? That's like 16 cents that comes our way. So I would encourage you to go and buy a lot of things through that affiliate.
Rodrigo,
you need a new computer to edit all the videos that you're putting up on your YouTube channel. Buy that through the Major Spoilers affiliate link and kick a little bit back my way, which in turn gets filtered into Rodrigo's pocket and to Matthew's pocket and to our server costs and to our other creators at majorspoilers.com. That's the only way I can keep my kids from going, Dad, it's so cold in this house and we're so hungry. Using those affiliate links really does help out. So thank you for everybody who is doing that. Okay, Rodrigo, I am very, very, very interested in a TV series that has just landed on the Netflix.
Mm-hmm. And you should be. So I watched the entire first season of Three Body Problem. I keep saying Three Body Problem, but correct. I guess it's just called Three Body Problem.
Yes.
When you say the Three Body Problem, you're talking about like the actual physics issue mm-hmm. of the Three Body Problem. But mm-hmm. Okay. So going into this, I was interested and somewhat excited to see it for kind of like very selfish reasons. I knew the book by reputation, right? Yeah. A lot of people that have read it really like it or don't like it, but yeah. I read the first book.
There's three books in the series. I read the first one and I liked it for what it was, but even though this at times feels very anti-current administration of Japan or of China centric, it still felt like there's a lot of Chinese propaganda in the story that didn't sit well with me. But the concept is fascinating. The concept that the story plays out is fascinating.
So it is a Chinese book and a very Chinese story. Mm-hmm. A lot of it does take place in China, which is probably very good for Netflix because there's a lot of money in Chinese stuff right now. Going in, I knew a few things about it. One, it has some really out there sci-fi concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's a book written by a Chinese person and largely takes place in China. And three, it's supposed to be pretty dense and somewhat obtuse, right?
Like difficult
to approach.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is excellent because I know that what Netflix is going to do is they're going to turn it into like a fun mystery show, but all of the nooks and crannies are going to be filled with weird sci-fi ideas that are uncommon of sci-fi stuff that's out right now, right? I know that I'm going to go into this and there's not going to be a sky pillar of light. Mm-hmm. And if you somehow disable it, all the aliens are going to fall apart. Right. I know that there's not going to be like a protagonist who gets like an alien thing embedded in him and then he has alien powers.
Right.
So I was like, this is great. And I went in and I was like, you know, it's by Weiss and Benioff with another writer, Alexander Wu, or another producer. And I thought, you know, I was like, well, am I worried because it's the Game of Thrones guys? And the fact of the matter is that the Game of Thrones guys did a very good job adapting Game of Thrones mm-hmm. up until the anime caught up to the manga, right?
Right.
And then it started causing problems. So I went in and I pretty much got exactly what I wanted. And I was like, I'm sure this isn't very much like the book, but it's a mystery. It's a very diverse show. It has a lot of Chinese cultural stuff, which I'm interested in mm-hmm. in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, here's a book here's a show who's like Inception, who's like first thing that happens is set during the Chinese Cultural Revolution, right? It's like,
right.
I have seen zero shows like that. I think because few shows like that make it out of China, or few shows like that happen in China even.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm like, okay, like all of this is new. All of this is interesting. I don't know much about it. So it's all very interesting. Again, they have a very diverse cast and the sci-fi stuff is really great, really fun, interesting. They do a really good job of like walking you to the edge of plausibility. It's well, nowadays we can do this. So it's not strange to imagine that maybe we could do this and then this, right? So it does a very good job with that sci-fi stuff of like telling you like this is just beyond the horizon. These technologies will be available or whatever.
I'm curious. In the book, there's a VR game that you play that introduces mm-hmm. you to the alien culture and the problems that they're facing, and you are one of the quote-unquote emperor's advisors, and you're supposed to be helping to figure out this, and you're also watching history being played while you're being a participant, so it's somewhat VR-ish. Did they bring in that VR game concept into this TV show?
Yep.
Okay, cool. All right.
Yeah, so I've gone back, and I was like, okay, now that I've seen it and enjoyed it, I'm going to see what people who read the book and people who really like the book are saying about it. And generally, it's actually pretty positive. Like, people are like, yeah, it's an adaptation. So they basically take out, like, it's like that first book has like three characters
mm-hmm.
and they split all of those characters into like seven different characters.
Oh boy. Okay.
So that, you know, on both ends of this conflict, so that, because one of the big criticisms of the book, I guess, is that its characterization is not very good. Like the characters are supposedly are very wooden and just so mm-hmm. that just like to convey these like concepts. But so they went in with like a much more thought to like the relationships between characters and how somebody would react and legitimately feel if, or like the many ways in which people would feel once hit with the revelations of what's happening out in the universe. So interestingly, people are saying that it's actually faithful to the sort of like spirit of the book, mm-hmm. which is nice. It's nice to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it makes me interested to read the book. And it definitely makes me interested to see what else they come up with. There are some intense scenes and some very violent scenes
mm-hmm.
in this.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the most horrible thing that happens is not like perpetrated by aliens or even the like bad faction. Actually, it's kind of the good guys that do like the most horrendous thing in this series, which, you know, maintains that complication of like, you know, do the ends justify the means stuff? Do the ends justify the means is like basically the broth that this is cooked in.
Yeah. Right? I mean,
everything that happens is a compromise of being like, okay, well, we need to do this to accomplish this. Are we willing to do this either horrible thing or like unproven, untested sci-fi nonsense to be able to accomplish what we want.
Yeah, I think the thing that kind of put me off a little bit is one of the characters in the book literally sells out the human race by hitting send and reaches out to the aliens to tell them where we're at. And it's like, okay, that's probably not the best thing to do, but she's doing it because she's been betrayed by her government. And
well, big spoilers for the show.
I mean, that's in the first, I mean, in the book that is literally within the first
it's
five or six chapters.
So, yeah, I guess in that sense, the show does a really good job of showing you somebody who has been, whose life has been completely destroyed,
mm-hmm.
right? By like the Red Guards yeah. and the Cultural Revolution. And so faced with this option, they're like, well, like we, like humans can't handle the world, right? Yeah. The world is full of pain and misery. Humans can't handle it. We should get taken over by aliens, and so does that, right? So I think that the show does a good job of showing you what state her mind is in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it does. I like when I saw it happen, I wasn't like, "What? Who would do that?" Like I was like,
right.
"No, I get it."
No, and that's what the rest of the book is doing.
I don't agree with it.
Yeah, the rest of the book is we keep jumping back and forth to her as a young woman. In the work camp, and then flashing forward to today where, you know, the detective is trying to analyze why are all these people being murdered? And we've got this other right. person that's like, I see numbers in the sky and people killing themselves and, you know, trying to figure out that mystery. And when you jump back and forth, by the time, at least for me, by the time you reach the end of the book, you're like, oh yes, I understand completely why she did it. But at the same time, I can't believe she completely did that. And so I don't know, there was something about the book that I was like, it's interesting, but there's something that feels kind of off-putting to me, and maybe it is the wooden characterization of some of the characters. I never moved on to the second and third books. Now, I read the first book two and a half years ago, I want to say, something like that. And then last year, China released its own version of Three Body Problem.
Yep.
If you get a chance and you have to do some digging, those episodes can be found on a certain tube that you have access to.
Mm.
And I think I ended up watching like the first five episodes in the season to the point where the two of the characters are playing pool. That's uh-huh. a big kind of scene in the book. And they're trying to figure out why this woman killed herself. And and then I don't remember if I lost track of it or they hadn't released the sixth episode or whatever it is. But so, I thought that the Chinese version was a really good adaptation of the book.
Oh, that's good. See,
yeah.
But that's a nice thing about the Netflix one is that it's obviously more available if you have Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But also the Chinese adaptation, I think, is 30 episodes.
It is. It is really, really long. And so that's why I got up to like, I think episodes five or six, somewhere around there. And I was just like, okay, I don't have time to continue this now. I will come back when it's there or when that next episode drops or whatever. So,
yeah. And I can't speak to this, but from people that have read the book and actually watched both of them, what I heard is that actually the Chinese version does a lot more to sanitize some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Than the Netflix show does, because like you know, Americans, like we don't yeah. care, like, oh, this make Chinese people look bad. We don't
yeah.
care, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously people in China do care about how their own history
right
makes them look or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. I haven't read the book. I haven't seen that one. I'm curious about it.
Well, so I'm curious because I will watch this. I didn't realize it had come out, or I got wrapped up because what I'm really enjoying sure. is Shogun, which is an adaptation of a book and it was also a TV show back in the 70s or 80s. I forget which. So I'm wrapped up in that right now, but I am interested in seeing the Netflix adaptation just because I've seen the other two, you know, the original and the Chinese television take on this. Now I want to see what does the English speaking audience do to this property, and do they twist it around to the point where it's a pale imitation of the original. I sure. think, and here's my, because you did say that a lot of the subject matter is very deep. And a lot of the concepts displayed in the book are very out there, that if you're not paying attention, you could get lost in some of the weirdness of the story that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Personally, I think if you watch one of these that is adapting Three Body Problem and not the second book, because I don't know if season two is supposed to adapt the second book or what from Netflix. But even if you go and watch the full 30 episodes of the Chinese language version, I think that that provides more context for when you go and read the book. So you're like, oh, now this makes a lot of sense, because you have the visuals and the other explanations that they add into the television series that make other things a lot more understandable.
Yeah.
So
I think that's probably true.
And I did, after I watched the episodes that I did watch of the Chinese language one, I started to understand a little bit more of what was being done in the book. So yeah. So I'm very interested in checking this out. I may even try to, depending on what time we finish tonight, I might try to at least watch the first episode.
Yeah,
catch the first episode.
Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's what, an hour? Is that what it is? Each episode an hour?
They're like, hour, 45 minutes, something like that.
Okay. All right.
It's funny because I got this dropped and I started watching it, and my algorithm, and I, you know, I don't get a lot of time. So pretty much all my TV viewing time has gone to this, and I got all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And my algorithm has been going nuts, because it's like, he's like, X-Men 97 is out. Like, you should, don't you want to watch this? And so it's like every YouTube video that I watch has an X-Men 97 like bumper in front of it.
Yeah.
Every, when I open up my Google Chromecast, it's right up front and center. They're like, we think you'll really like this. And I keep like scrolling past it, and it must be going insane. It's like, I thought I knew this person, but I guess I don't. It's like, I haven't had the time. I'm sorry, Google. I just haven't had the time to sit down and watch X-Men 97, because I was watching something else that started maybe like 1 or 2 days before it. All right. Calm down. I'm going to get to it.
You'll get to it. Don't worry. And if that doesn't work for you, don't forget the X-Men 97 comic book is also out, I think, this week. So kind of coincides with the TV series. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Although, man, the discourse on X-Men 97 online is amazing. Just how can people have the complete wrong? How can people think Paul is the good guy in Dune?
Sure.
It's the same way with X-Men 97. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Are you guys serious? Are you sure that's what you want to say? But okay.
Yeah. I haven't read Dune, but it's like sort of like Three Body Problem. I have friends, and also I have like in my orbit of sci-fi stuff, a lot of people talk about it, and I'm like, I know how Paul dies.
Yeah.
In the end, in the books. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, look at how he dies. Right. It's like, this is what they're saying about him. It's not whatever you think they're saying about him now. That's not it.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, the X-Men 97 discourse is not great, because I think probably a lot of people watched the X-Men as kids and didn't think about the message of the X-Men.
Yeah.
And regardless of how clumsy to incredibly clumsy their handling of sort of like the metaphor of the X-Men is, because I don't think you ever get better than clumsy with the X-Men, because eventually aliens show up and you have to like restart time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's not what the X-Men are trying to do. This is just a theme of the X-Men. It always has that theme of like, there are people who are different and they sort of need to be protected from the greater population, because you don't choose to be different. Very often you are just different.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's no reason to hurt someone. So yeah, there's people who are like, whoa, when did the X-Men start getting all woke? And I'm like, dude,
the X-Men have always been 1960, 1970s.
Yeah. Whenever they came out.
Yeah. It just really is.
The Claremont run.
Yeah, definitely the Claremont run. But yeah, I feel the same way. I mentioned the original Ghostbusters and how that's a movie for adults. And then if you really think about it, when you were a kid, you were like laughing at all the parts and the, you know, I'm the gatekeeper. And you got to think that, oh yeah, they had sex and Dan Aykroyd and the ghost did some stuff. And there's a, you know, here is Bill Murray torturing a guy so he can get with one of his students. And it's like, well, this is like a very adult oriented stuff, and it just goes right over people's heads.
And there you go. Ghostbusters, a very actually conservative comedy in the sense that the bad guy is the EPA.
Yes, yes, exactly, right? And it just goes over everybody's heads. And then, of course, they turn it into a cartoon. And then everyone's like, ah, this is all silly, silliness stuff. And so I think that's why we just assume that things like Ghostbusters are for kids, or that X-Men doesn't have a deeper meaning beyond, you know, let's punch Magneto in the face, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or that, hey, the Cultural Revolution or the Chinese Revolution and it was really a big deal and really maybe made some things good or messed some things up. And, you know, how it affected a lot of people's lives. Of course, now this show is banned in China, just so you know. We have one person.
One?
No, no, no. Our podcast is banned in China.
Oh, our podcast.
Oh, yeah. Our podcast is banned in China. We have like one download from the entirety of China. And I think that's one person who is VPN.
The minister of podcasts that's listening in
is probably listening in that, or they're just stealing it and taking critical hit in all of our shows and just creating Chinese versions of Chinese language versions of our shows. And
honestly,
I would be
so interested in seeing that.
So would I, actually. I was thinking about that today. I was like, who is that one person in China that is listening to this show, and how are they doing it legally? And do they like it? And then I just started going down this rabbit hole of, I bet that someone there is taking our show and just turning it into a Chinese language version. And they probably have like tens of millions of fans listening to it every week. And all they're doing is just like, okay, when is the new episode coming out so I can make my episode? So I know the weird things that go through my head on a late night, Rodrigo, is probably not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, thank you to everybody who supports this show and all the things that we do at Major Spoilers. We've got a top five coming up this week where Rodrigo and I sit down and we talk about our top five movies from the 1950s. We're going to get all the movies covered eventually. I promise you that, ladies and gentlemen. We've got Legion Clubhouse had a new episode last week. We've got new episodes of Critical Hit, our punch all Nazis game using the Octoon Cthulhu system, where we're punching Nazis and we're punching cosmic horror and we're just punching bad guys in general. Nobody's a good guy in this game, I gotta tell you, except for our heroes like Rodrigo, who plays a very charming dilettante who is trying to stop evil from entering our world. You can check that all out over at majorspoilers.com in our podcast network. What were you gonna say about your character?
Well, deep daddy issues, definitely. Oh, I know some people are really into that.
Oh man, I love our community of fans who listen to specifically this game right now and are really getting into the, oh, what about this? And what about this? So, somebody said a few weeks ago, I thought when the team went to America that this would just be a light little thing and it might not be that interesting. But the America arc where we're getting into the backgrounds of all these characters is fascinating. And so, definitely listeners, if you are not listening to Critical Hit, you need to do it. And the only way that we're able to bring you this podcast, the only way we're able to bring you Top 5, Legion Clubhouse, Wayne's Comics Podcast, and Critical Hit is through the support of listeners just like you. So if you want to be one of those cool kids and you want to support the fine art of podcasting, you want to support the arts, you can walk around and say, I support podcasts. All you need to do is head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. And for just a few bucks a month, you can keep this show and all of the other shows coming out week after week after week. And if you sign up at any level, silver level, the $2 level, $10, $20, the 15,000 Daddy Warbucks a month level, you're going to get a shout out right here on this show. We didn't have any new patrons this week. We had a few people drop off. I understand. Tax time is here. I got my tax bill today. And whoo, boy, Major Spoilers is my children are, Daddy, it's so cold. We're so hungry. I probably already said that already, but man, the tax man came and knocked on my door and said, hey, you need to pay this up. And I was like, okay, let's go see if we have any money in our Patreon account. And so we could use your help. Patreon.com/majorspoilers helps us grow, helps the government. Think about it. The tax man is going to come back next year and said, you had 80,000 new members sign up in the past year. You owe us even more money. Yeah. I can't wait to talk to the tax man about the 80,000 new listeners that are going to be here this time next year. And you can make it happen by going to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Taxman coming for you this year, Rodrigo?
Probably, seeing as how between book royalties, which aren't that big, and podcasting, which also isn't that big in my from what I'm getting. I don't pay any taxes as they happen, so yeah. I have to pay all those taxes on the back end. So yeah, definitely.
I don't know what happened, because technically we lost some money at Major Spoilers this last year, but somehow we owe more taxes than we did last year.
It's probably because laws are changing.
I know, stupid laws are screwing everything up for us right here at Major Spoilers. I'm going to talk about that in an upcoming VIP live chat. I don't think it's this weekend, because isn't this weekend like Easter or something, a religious holiday for the religious peoples?
I think people might
be too busy, but maybe I'll do a VIP live chat. That's for our gold level. And I'll talk about all the things the government's doing to keep this company down. And we're still fighting. We're fighting for you, dear listener, to bring you entertainment. I'm fighting for my fine fellow co-hosts like Rodrigo, so that we can put money in his pocket so he can feed his little puppy dogs and his little kitty cats and keep the Lopez Family Variety Hour going strong. We can do that with your help. Patreon.com/Major Spoilers. You know who else is coming for us, Rodrigo?
Who?
The Black Glove.
Oh, no.
Because Matthew demanded it and then conveniently didn't show up this week.
I'm so sad that Matthew couldn't make it. And also, I think we had Rand scheduled.
Yeah, Rand was going to come in and talk about it too, yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, good. I don't have that much to say about this. And then they both fail, and I'm like, oh, no. I'm going to have to talk about the Black Glove.
We read Grant Morrison's Batman years and years ago. And so because I haven't read this Grant Morrison run in such a long time, a lot of my frustrations with Grant Morrison's run popped back up in this reread. Sure. But I will say the entire Grant Morrison run, I don't know why we ended up reading 6 issues. I think because that's what's collected in the trade. Really, we're only interested in the Batman of Many Nations arc, essentially right. An adaptation of the Agatha Christie 10 Little Indians. That's the title, not me being insensitive. Book about people who are being murdered one by one when they're invited to a dinner party and the figuring out who done it. So in this case, Batman and Robin come to the mysterious island, and they have been invited along with all of the other Batman of Many Nations to come and meet with their founder. And then they're murdered one by one, little by little. They are all murdered until Batman figures out who done it. I think it's a little bit of a stretch, but maybe not so much. I didn't really go back and say, oh, was the plane really dry when we came in? Was there a panel that showed that? Was the boat on dry dock when they came in? Are the clues really there, or are the clues just suddenly revealed at the end? And so I think that's interesting in this story, especially when what Grant Morrison was doing with his entire Batman run is trying to say, how do we take the entire continuity of Batman? All the crazy stuff, right. All the Zur-En-Arr space Batman stuff, because the Zur-En-Arr stuff appears in the very first page of Grant Morrison's run. How does all of this stuff make sense? How can I incorporate it all, including this weird thing where you have a Native American Batman and you have a Mexican Batman and you have an English Batman who is a knight, and you have, all of these other Batman. It's too bad they couldn't get Japanese Batman in there somehow.
Sure.
But you have all of these characters that were around for like one or two issues. And Grant Morrison is trying to tell a story that reintroduces these characters to the DC universe and says, yes, they've always been here. And yes, they've grown. And yes, they've done different things. And oh, by the way, I'm going to kill off most of them, if not all of them, by the time that we hit the end of the issue. So what did you think about this little thing here that we're reading?
I mean, I didn't love it.
How come? I'm curious how come.
So, it's paced in a really weird way.
That is my biggest problem, too, is the pacing.
Yeah, I kind of read a little bit more than we were, quote-unquote, supposed to for the podcast. Mm-hmm. By accident, I misread what we were supposed to read.
Yeah.
And between all of the stuff I read, the pacing is so jarring in all of these stories. You will have a page where a character is introduced and then you'll jump to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't see that character again for a long time. And you kind of have to like flip back and be like, what was that character doing originally?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just tons of that. And then there's like flashbacks. This particular story does one thing with flashbacks that is nice, which is that it puts them in like four color, like dots.
Yeah.
Like, but that's one of the flashbacks is like that. So then I'm at least like, okay, at least I know that this is happening in the past. There are parts of this where they do backtrack to stuff. And like, I have to be like, oh, this is something that happened before.
Yes.
Like, it's not something that's happening now.
Right.
And it's just so hard to tell. There's like no indication. And like, things move, like some things move really fast. And it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, we have to do this. And then you flip the page. I'm like, we have done it. Here's what's happening now. I don't know. I just like the pacing is just very jarring.
Yeah. And there was a point where after about a second reread, right immediately after the Grant's run ended, where I went back and I read the whole thing just straight through from the very beginning to the other end. And I'm like, oh, okay, I see why this is going this way and what Morrison is trying to say here. And, you know, all the weirdness that's going on. But at the same time, a lot of the storytelling techniques that Morrison uses is very much like you're watching an action trailer from the late 90s, early 2000s, where sure, it's just like these super fast cuts and you don't know what's going on. And, you know, suddenly someone's screaming, look out. And then suddenly someone's cutting through a door and it's like, where'd that door come from? And it's just like super jarring through a lot of it. And I want to say that has to be by design, but part of me is just like, I kind of wish you'd slow it down. Maybe I do want to see an action sequence where they defeat the armor that's shooting lasers at them.
Right.
Or I do want to see what happened to Gaucho beyond just a red dot appearing on his shoulder. I want to see a little bit more of that instead of this one panel and suddenly he's gone and you're like, oh, I guess he got shot.
Yeah. And then he's back.
And it's just like the pacing in this is super, super jarring. And I think that is my biggest complaint about this particular arc is that it rushes you through it. I thought that this was a 6-issue story because that's how I remembered it was being kind of drawn out. And maybe it's because it was being released month after month when it first came out.
Sure.
But then I was like, oh no, this is only like 3 issues. And then we get into some stuff where Batman starts to go a little crazy and there's flashbacks in that as well that are jarring at times. So I guess that's my biggest complaint is that the pacing is really off.
What it is. I think maybe, you know, they told them is like, hey, you get like 3 years of Batman or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot of stories that he wants to tell or a lot of characters that he wants to sort of give a take on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, okay, well, this story has to be 3 issues tops. Right. So it's going to have to, I'm going to have to introduce like 12 characters.
Yeah.
12 characters, kill 8 of them and hopefully make the audience feel something as that's happening. And it's, you know, partially successful.
I mean, I think it is. I think I needed a little bit more whodunit, and they start to do a little bit of the whodunit when all of a sudden I forget what the guy's name is, Maury or whatever the host that has invited them to the island, Morse. I'll just call him Morse. And, you know, they show him on the monitor on the screen as everybody sits down to dinner. And he's like, I'm wearing his skin. I've actually killed him. I am the Black Glove, blah, blah, blah. And then you start to actually get into some, let's solve a mystery where everybody goes in and they find the room that is the surveillance room. And based on what they see on the screen, they can pinpoint where that this was took place in the library. So everybody rushes to some of the people rush to the library. Some people are already dead at this point. And so at that point, it's like makes a lot of sense. And then from there, it just is compressed so much that you do have to flip back and forth through the pages a lot of the times. But I do enjoy the mystery. I do like this thing that here are all these people, regardless if they are all Batman knockoffs or not, or the question of what happens, I guess the big question is, and it's kind of brought up in the first issue of this arc, is what happens when someone has so much money what do they do? And some people, yeah, like Bruce Wayne, becomes a vigilante and actually does vigilante work, and that's what really drives him. Other people want to emulate Batman, and they're doing it for funsies, for going out and picking up women, in the case of the Roman version of Batman.
Like Legionnaire,
yeah, yeah. Other people are just doing it because they were a sidekick, you know, when we look at the Knight from England. Yeah. And you know, we see that they're just kind of forced into this and they have parent trauma. And then we see other people are just doing this from jealousy of Batman. And we get to understand what do these rich people do. And then you find out who the person is that gathers them together, and he's ultra rich. And he, you know, you start to understand what the 1%, and maybe that's the story, is the 1% are just always going to go crazy no matter what, when they have infinite wealth and they have no struggles in life. Oh, well, I'll just bring everybody to my island and kill them or whatever. I mean, that's not the plot or the answer, but I mean, or is it, what happened to the crazy rich? The crazy rich, money makes you crazy. And that's what's playing out in the story, and revenge and retribution and jealousy and anger and all these things play out because of that. And because you don't have anything holding you back, because you are somebody who's rich and you can get away with it because you're privileged over everyone else, it makes you go even further into that madness. And so maybe that's the overall story that we're supposed to, or the theme that we're supposed to take away from this. Maybe, I don't know. But it just seems like, yeah, it's cool that there's other Batman, but I think that Morrison is trying to tell a deeper story here beyond just building up this black glove mythos.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I really, really liked in this is the art by J.H. Williams. And I don't remember if this is the first. I want to say he did Batwoman before he did Black Glove, because there's a lot of things that in his Batwoman run that he did that we see popping up here in this, like the splash page that is the Bat logo and every panel is part of the wings and the Bat body and those kinds of things. I really dig that. And I really dig, as you said, the flashback to when it's the four color panel stuff. Yeah. But is it me, or is Batman rendered more realistic in the art than everyone else? Like, even in the stuff that is like the modern day stuff where he's there with Wingman and the Legionnaire and all that stuff, they still have this cartoony look, but because of the way that they're coloring Batman, he looks more hyper real than everyone around him.
Yeah, it's probably the shadows. It's because he's always got shadows on, like a lot, like,
yeah,
10 times as much shadow on him.
Yeah.
And so his like face is more defined because of the shadows, and his cape is more defined. But yeah, I would compare this art to like a John Romita Jr.
Mm-hmm,
maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you can think about that, like, John Romita Jr.'s art is very stylized, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's what most of the character looks like, but Batman doesn't look like that. I really think it is just that he just gets, it's like his render, like he just has way more polygons than everybody else.
He just gets
like a lot more shadows.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but as I'm reading, I'm like, why does Batman pop out in this? And I'm like, oh yeah, he's kind of colored differently or shaded differently or something. And it just makes him stand out among everyone else. And maybe that also is kind of the subtle point of the art, is that Batman is a standout among all the rest. And that's why he didn't become part of the Batman of many nations, and why they did have a falling out. Maybe that part of it is there too.
Later on, there's a lot of questioning about what has and hasn't happened as Batman starts to kind of lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're meant to go back and look at this and be like, well, Batman is always like realistically rendered, but the other characters aren't, because they might be figments of his imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really true. It's not just like, it doesn't just feel that way. Like, I'm looking at a page right now. What is it? Page 198.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's two panels side by side, and one of them, Man of Bats and the Knight Man of Bats is like helping the Knight. In the next one, you see Batman from behind and you see his cape. Batman's cape has so much detail to it. Just like every fold and every crease is there. But if you look at Man of Bats, like, his muscles are almost completely flat. Like, he basically has a slight gradient, right? Mm-hmm. Where like human skin and especially human muscle and somebody who's like flexing their arm in the way that he is, like would have like some dimpling and some creasing and some all of this other stuff, right? But that stuff's not rendered out. So yeah, no, I hadn't. It was like somewhere in the back of my mind, but now that you bring it up, it's like, yeah, no, totally. Batman is just like more fully rendered than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And that may play into the part, like you said, of Batman's mental stability when you get into Batmite and Zurnar and what if it, Batros or whatever the villain is, where you do have to go back and look at things. Because that was one of the things that I really, after I read Morrison's Batman run, and I went back and reread it because I was a real hater of his run. I can't remember if it's him or they or however Morrison is.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so when I went back and read Morrison's run, I was like, okay, now this starts to make more sense, and I have a greater appreciation for what's going on. So when Morrison went over to Action Comics and was telling the Superman story, I saw some of the same complaints where people were like, well, this doesn't make sense, or, you know, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, Morrison is playing the long game. This will all make sense when you get to the very last issue and you have to go back and reread it, all the other stuff. And so I feel like that's kind of what has happened with Black Glove, is that you do go back in and reread it with this deeper understanding, and then all of the clues pop out. So, yeah. So, yeah, Morrison does go by they, them. So, apologize if I've been using the wrong pronoun on that. So, yeah, there is that weird part of the story that makes you go, yeah, this is really compressed. It's really weird pacing. But then when you look at however many chapters this is, 70 issues or whatever, and you're like, ah, okay, I see how this all parts together. And then you suddenly realize the genius of Morrison in their storytelling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
It is weird to come at it in this slice, because I think this run was a run that was planned out very thoroughly. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like a Morrison run is like a Neil Gaiman run, or like a, I don't know, somebody, you know what I mean? It's like something that was planned from beginning to end and is supposed to build on the themes from beginning to end. So cutting out a slice of it, I think there's probably stuff that is like sort of like weird and off-putting, but that is going to matter later, or there are themes that have been established before that maybe, like, certainly I didn't necessarily know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that's why it's nice that Batman the Black Glove is now collected into a single volume, so that you can read his entire run in that. We do get the introduction of Damian Wayne in here, which I've gone on record that there's no way you can convince me to like Damian Wayne. Tim Drake was a much better Robin. The introduction of Damian, I've never cared for. I mean, it makes sense in the fact that, you know, there was a whole thing with Neil Adams making Batman and Talia get it on in the desert. So yeah, maybe they would have a child, and well, the fact that it's a clone and et cetera, it just gets really weird. And I just do not like Damian.
That's the thing about this run, is that Morrison is like, everything fits in here somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, once you get past that, I think maybe in like the second set of three issues that we read, mm-hmm. or maybe farther ahead, because like I said, I ended up reading past that. There's this part where like Tim and Alfred are like walking down into the Batcave, and they're just like being like, hey, wasn't Bruce dead for like 3 minutes and then brought back by the Lazarus pit? Yes, that happened. Also, he was in, like, before that, he was like in a isolation chamber, mm-hmm. or, like, maybe afterwards or whatever. And I'm like, is that all from this run, or are they like recounting like Batman Venom or? Like,
oh yeah, no, they're recounting all things through Batman history.
So, like, so that's the thing. Like,
there is a story where Batman does go into an isolation chamber.
Yeah, because they're trying to find a place to fit everything. Some of the stuff fits in really awkwardly, just like sticking out the side, and it's like very jarring. But I think it's a lot easier to swallow or to move through it when you are like, okay, Grant Morrison is trying to fit 70 years of Batman into one run and is like explicitly calling his shot or their shots at at the awkward stuff, right? At Zur-En-Arr, mm-hmm. at the Batman of Many Nations, at Batmite, mm-hmm. at like Rainbow Batman, right? It's like all of that stuff. They've challenged themselves to make it fit and make it make sense. The problem that I then have with it is that the way that you fit it into like a modern gritty Batman scenario is by destroying it. So it's like mm-hmm. we are introduced to the Batman of Many Nations, which I think in this are just called like something like the crime fighting group or something. Yeah, that's a very generic name,
right.
Which is fine, completely on purpose. I like it. I totally appreciate that. But then the majority of them end up getting killed, and it's like I can't tell if this was respectful or not. Like, why bring back these characters just to kill them, right?
I know, right? Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to show this reverence for all of the writers of Batman that have come before, why bring their characters back, mention that some of them are corrupt and some of them are, like, past their prime, and then just kill them, right? It's just, mm-hmm. like, it left a bad taste in my mouth because, you know, we've read some of this stuff, and it was in at a time when Batman was that sort of like Silver Age, wacky, there's a space Batman kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Batman number 185 from October 1966 is the one that features Batman having hallucinations when he is in an isolation chamber. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they bring it all in here. And in hindsight, once you've read the entire storyline, I wouldn't recommend doing it in one sitting because I tried to do that and it just messed up my mind. But if you can read it over the course of a week or a month, then suddenly everything starts to click. And in the end, I respect the genius of Grant Morrison in the story that he is telling in the grand scheme of things with this. This particular chapter of the Batman of Many Nations and killing them off one by one, I felt was too jarring. I understand that it's part of a bigger story and a bigger concept. I just didn't care for it. But again, Batman the Black Glove is collected in one giant volume. So you can read all of this together and you get introduced to crazy things that happen. New loves for Batman, Batman's identity being revealed again, Batmite, all this crazy stuff. So collected as a whole, I think it is good. Taken in the individual chunks, I think it may be confusing or off-putting to readers who are not familiar with how Morrison likes to lay things down in issue one that don't pay off until issue 52.
Yeah.
So for me, I say pick it up. It's like $25 to pick up the entire Black Glove saga. It's a lot of good comic reading, a lot of great art by J.H. Williams. But at the same time, it may not be for you if you maybe don't have a bigger, I don't want this to sound like I'm being that person. It's like, well, you must have been reading Batman since issue number one in order to appreciate this. I don't think that's the case. But if you do have an understanding that, yes, there was a crazy time where Batman went into an isolation chamber, then that story starts to make a lot of sense. Oh, I remember what happened there. And yes, it was all just craziness. This makes sense in what Morrison is doing. Bravo, Morrison, bravo, kind of thing. I don't think that it's required to have read the entire Batman or Detective Comics run in order to appreciate what Morrison is doing with his take on Batman. So I'm kind of middle of the road on this. If you can get it as a collected edition, hardbound, a collected edition, I say pick it up. But many people, I guess today, as I was going back and looking at some reviews of Morrison's run, a lot of people are saying that this is the definitive Batman story kind of take. Yeah. And so I can appreciate that. So maybe it is worth picking up for that case. So that's kind of where I sit. I'm kind of like, I enjoy it, but I also understand why people wouldn't enjoy it because I started out as someone who did not enjoy this run. What say you, Rodrigo?
It's a pass for me. I think I'm not that invested in Batman's history. There's lots of old Batman stories that I like, and that's fine, but I'm not somebody who's like a, you know, I don't think of like Batman's continuity the way that like a lot of the time I used to think about the X-Men's continuity, where I was like, I care that this happened and then this happened. And then, you know, Longshot was there. Like with Batman, I don't have that connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that I like about old stuff in Batman, which often gets brought up in this run, but then I hate the way it's brought back.
Yeah.
So, just because of like the general themes and the takes. So there's almost nothing here for me. It's like a lot of dredging up the past, and the stuff that was from the past that I enjoyed is changed in such a way that I don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
And then a lot of stuff that I don't get because I didn't read it. So for me, it's a pass.
So there was a really cool thing that happened in the giant sized omnibus edition of DC, The New Frontier, the story by Darwin Cook, because mm-hmm. he also did a lot of the same thing in New Frontier yeah. where he was pulling out panels or he was pulling out story bits from actual DC Silver Age stories and incorporating them in to this so that by the time you got to the Silver Age portion, all of it made sense. And if you were a good comics historian, then you would know all these things panel to panel. In the original release, you had to hunt all that stuff down yourself and figure it out. In the big, yeah. giant, oversized omnibus edition, I think the Absolute Edition is what it's called, they actually, in the back, had a page-by-page, panel-by-panel breakdown of where all of these references are. So you could go, oh, on panel, you know, page 27, panel 3, you see Wonder Woman holding this cup. That is actually the cup that was seen in this issue of this comic from, you know, 1942. And you're like, oh, okay, that's really cool. I wonder if that would be a good thing to have in Probably. A collection like this, to where you could say, oh, Batman went into an isolation chamber in Batman 185 from 1966, just so you kind of know that, okay, this was a story from there. And maybe you want to go and track it down, or maybe not. It's a crazy story. So, I mean, I think that's the one where Robin dies. Batman is carrying Robin out that we would later see mm-hmm. repeated with the death of Supergirl and then the actual death of and of Robin of what's his name?
Jason Todd.
Jason Todd. Yeah, years later. So I think maybe the thing that would make this maybe a little better is to have an annotated edition of Batman the Black Glove or Batman the Morrison Run. If you had an annotated version of that, I think that would work really good. Just like we did on Major Spoilers way back in the day during 52, we were going through, and if I did a weekly review of 52, I was like, oh, look, the back of the bus has this Speedy Turtle. Speedy the Turtle is this character from DC Comics, blah, 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 blah. I think that stuff makes the reading maybe a little bit more enjoyable. And some people would disagree with me because it's like, well, if you know, you know, or the joy is in trying to yeah. discover it yourself, which I understand,
yeah,
but some people don't have the time or the resources to track everything down. So just having a quick annotation, it would be great.
I think maybe that's what this is. You know, Morrison went in and said, this is going to be a Batman fan's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you know, you know, and this is who it's for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it would be nice to have an annotated thing for those of us that don't remember if Batman ever went into an isolation chamber, or if we're getting it confused with another thing where Batman was hallucinating, of which there are lots.
Yes, yes, yes,
so,
yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. Batman the Black Glove, specifically the story of the Batman of many nations on an island. Thank you for checking us out this week. If you found some value in the show, we would love for you to join us on our Patreon. Again, the show doesn't happen without fine people just like you. And you can be one of those fine people by joining us at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Next week on the show, it's Do a Powerbomb Wrestling Comics Come to Major Spoilers Podcast. Why? Because I think WrestleMania weekend 2024 takes place this next weekend. And because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I bag and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Bob Stark Raven. operates like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle race with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.